Chapter 1. Gulls circled overhead, mewing plaintively. Water sloshed and lapped against the side of the rocking boat. The hot, bright August afternoon smelled of diesel and brine and rubber and liverwurst. Ellery said, "Hey, do you remember that poison pen letter I got a while back?"
"Yep."
Jack spoke absently, double-checking the regulator and hoses of Ellery's diving equipment. Jack Carson was Pirate's Cove's police chief and Ellery's boyfriend. He was also a certified diver. Scuba was his one and only hobby, so it was no surprise he owned his gear, but Ellery was renting everything from his flippers to his air tanks, and Jack was not a believer in leaving anything to chance. Whatever came of that? Anything? I mean, did the lab find any fingerprints? Jack glanced automatically toward the bow of the Fishful Thinkin', where Cap Elijah Murphy sat in the cockpit, eating a sandwich and arguing amiably with whoever was at the other end of the ship-to-shore radio. Although technically employed by the Scuttlebutt Weekly, Cap was no reporter, let alone a gossip columnist. He contributed a weekly editorial wherein he detailed his fierce objections to any and all changes to Buck Island in general, and the village of Pirate's Cove in particular.
"No, that is, the only decipherable fingerprints were yours."
When Ellery didn't respond, Jack squeezed his neoprene-clad shoulder, turning Ellery to face him.
"Why? I really think that letter was just
local hysteria?"
"Well, yeah. Reaction to Trevor's murder."
Ellery's smile was wry.
"I thought so, too, but..."
"But?"
"I got another one yesterday evening."
Jack's blue-green eyes narrowed.
"You... same as before. No stamp. No return address. Heck, no mailing address. Just my name printed on the face of the envelope, hand-delivered to the crow's nest."
"By whom? Did you see who dropped it off?"
"No. We were busy all afternoon, and then I let Nora leave at 3 because we were closing early anyway."
Ellery's parents had been arriving on Saturday's 5 o'clock ferry, and he'd wanted to be there to meet them. They were spending the next week on Buck Island.
I only noticed the letter as I was locking up. It was propped on the base of Rupert's case.
Rupert was a glass-encased resin skeleton clothed in vintage pirate costume, which greeted customers as they entered the bookshop. The case was positioned just a few feet from the front door, so someone could easily enter the shop, leave the envelope, and duck out again without ever being seen from the front desk. Jack's brows formed a single, dark, forbidding line.
"Did you open it?"
"Of course. It didn't occur to me it was another anonymous letter until I was already reading it." Jack's scowl deepened.
"What did it say?"
"I hope you kept it."
"I kept it."
"Good." "It was pretty much a repeat performance. You will die was the central theme," Ellery said lightly, but the truth was he was troubled by the reappearance of his poison pen pal. Like Jack, he'd dismissed the original anonymous threat as his neighbor's suspicion that he'd murdered Trevor Maples. If that wasn't the reason, what was? Jack's smile didn't quite reach his eyes, but his tone was brisk, reassuring.
"Don't worry about it. We'll find out who this joker is. I promise you they won't be laughing when I'm finished with them."
Ellery nodded. He didn't enjoy receiving anonymous hate mail, who did? But it wasn't like he was afraid. Back when he'd earned his living playing hapless, haunted Noah Street in the Happy Halloween You're Dead movies, he'd received plenty of mail from clearly not right-in-the-head theatergoers. It kind of went with the job. Happily, none of the long-distance threats and taunts had ever manifested into a clear and present danger, and he was assuming, hoping, that was the case here. Still, not fun. Jack went swiftly through his own dive prep, testing his regulator, snapping his tank in place on the back of his dive suit, attaching the regulator to the tank, and then turning the knob to test the flow of air.
He checked his air pressure gauge and appeared satisfied.
Okay. At 70 feet, we'll have about 45 minutes down there. Sound good?
Sounds great, Ellery said.
Let's do it.
They clumped their way to the back of the rocking boat. Before Jack pushed his regulator in his mouth, he warned,
The surge is rougher out here.
I noticed. Jack grinned, his teeth white in his tanned face.
Nothing you can't handle.
Ellery grinned back. He appreciated the compliment. He was still new to diving, but he was already hooked. For their first underwater excursions, Jack had taken him to the Buck Island Pinnacles, a formation of enormous stacked boulders created by the Wisconsin ice sheets eons ago. They'd spent pleasant hours exploring the huge underwater cliffs and swim-throughs, teeming with fish and other ocean life. Unfortunately, also teeming with tourists. Now that Jack was satisfied Ellery had the basics down and was as strong a swimmer as he'd claimed, they were venturing farther out, away from the schools of summer visitors, to try diving the numerous wrecks a few miles offshore. Specifically, they were hunting for the legendary pirate galleon, Blood Red Rose, reportedly sunk in a hurricane off the island coast in the 1700s. Cap had anchored outside the cove at Seal Point, Buccaneers Bay, where the Blood Red Rose once harbored, safely concealed from the Royal Navy and mainland excisemen. Given that divers had been hunting for the Blood Red Rose since the early 19th century without luck, Ellery wasn't setting his hopes of pirate treasure too high. They was really looking forward to diving without bumping into charter boats or tourists every few feet. Jack put his regulator in his mouth. Ellery followed suit, and they rolled backward into the sea. Oh, that first cold blue rush. Blue and then bluer. Cold and then colder. The sudden weightlessness, the feeling of dropping through space and time. The sudden silence. Through the stream of bubbles, they signaled okay to each other and began releasing air from their vests in preparation for their descent through the shafts of sunlight. 10 feet down, they sank through a cloud of sleek, silvery, striped fish, a huge school of bass. It was a little disorienting, that swarming flash and dart of other living creatures. They were the trespassers here. But there was something exhilarating about the encounter, too. Ellery reached out, and the fish veered away in synchronized swim. He glanced at Jack and could see Jack's smile around his regulator. Diving really was about the journey rather than the destination, although no question, the destination was always terrific. The school of bass disappeared as quickly as they'd appeared. As Jack and Ellery continued down the anchor line, they hit the seasonal thermocline, the transitional layer between warmer mixed water at the ocean's surface and cooler deep water below, and with that sudden, startling drop in temperature came greater visibility, as if a door into another world slid open in invitation. They continued their descent into silence, broken only by the hiss and swallow sounds of their breathing apparatus. Breathing steadily normally helped equalize the increasing hydrostatic pressure. Ellery instinctively wiggled his jaw and breathed out through his nose to ease the push against his eardrums. Jack was right. The current was rougher out here. Nothing Ellery couldn't handle, but yeah, the training wheels were off. Not far below them were the scattered wrecks, the odd girder sticking up through the swaying green-gold kelp forests, the squat outline of a large boiler, home now to cartoon-colored eel pout, scorpionfish, and crabs. All was silent but for the bubbles and suction of their regulators. Jack spotted the massive shape lurking nearby in the water first. He touched Ellery's arm, pointed, and Ellery stared, trying to make out what that huge shadow in suddenly not so distant distance belonged to. Not a shadow, a form. A long, pale form slowly circling them. His breath seemed to freeze in his chest. Shark. Not just any shark. He'd seen enough episodes of Shark Week to recognize that terrifyingly distinctive shape, a great white. He knew there were sharks in the waters around the island, but he had not been expecting great whites. Even as he tried to remind himself that sharks, even great white sharks, weren't typically aggressive to humans, did not rely on humans for food, and did not, probably, present a genuine threat, he could feel his pulse speeding up, his lungs gulping in more air. Why the heck was it circling? What did circling mean? Was it getting closer, or was that his alarmed imagination? This is like a bad movie, and I ought to know. He jumped as Jack's gloved hand closed on his arm, turned to see where Jack was pointing. He spotted the cavernous skeletal remains of a sunken ship a few yards behind them. Old, but not pirate ship old. A 20th century vessel. Some kind of freighter? The hollow structure, starkly black against blue sea, lay tilted on its side, the enormous propellers half buried in the sand. He could just make out the faded letters of her name. Roussillon. Rigging lines, laden with barnacles, hung from the mast like worry beads, drifting in the current. Coral and sponges transformed the steel hull into aquatic street art, and jewel-bright fish swam through portholes, darting around cables and beams, then doing an about-face and disappearing in an instant, like anime fish at the sight of the great white, which was definitely drawing closer. Definitely. Ellery could see its eyes now, black and empty. Jack didn't have to point twice. Ellery turned and swam for the wreck as strongly and smoothly as he could. And God bless Benjamin Franklin, or whoever had invented swim fins. As Ellery reached the black square void of entrance, he hesitated, afraid the shark would follow them, that they would be trapped inside with a cold-blooded threshing machine. But Jack thumped his shoulder lightly, and Ellery finned into the first compartment. There was some kind of hold, an area as huge, lightless, and cold as outer space. Ellery's chest felt tight with pressure, not the hydrostatic kind, the dark, the cold, the unknown. All of it pressed in on him. He had to fight his instinctive resistance, his fear. And then Jack's flashlight came on, creating a tunnel of light before them, and Ellery's anxiety subsided a little. A turtle flapped across the beam and disappeared. Jack said something, the words garbled, but his tone, even underwater and laced with bubbles, was ridiculously calm. Jack had to have dived this wreck before because he was moving without hesitation, guiding the way through an entryway and then down what appeared to be a companionway. Ellery followed, aware of things moving eerily in the shadows, recoiling from the light and motion, retreating. Their raspy, bubbling breaths bounced noisily off the steel walls. Good thing he didn't suffer from claustrophobia. Ellery had been in some creepy places, both real life and movie sets, but the bowels of this dead ship were by far the creepiest. They reached another passageway, empty and dark, and slipped through a doorway far too narrow for a shark the size of the one they'd seen. How much farther were they going? How much air did they have left? What if Jack got this wrong? He didn't want, it wasn't his nature, to obey without question, without hesitation. So why the heck was he blithely swimming through the lightless corridors of this metal tomb? Once again, Ellery had to squelch his rising consternation. And then they were swimming upward in the flooded compartment, popping to the inky surface like a pair of corks. Jack pulled off his mouthpiece. Ellery followed suit, pulled out his own regulator with shaking hands, gasping, "Holy!" A small pocket of air, at least partly comprised of their own exhaled bubbles, had collected against the ceiling. "We're okay here," Jack's voice echoed weirdly in the compartment. "We'll give our friend a little space." Was that what I thought it was? That wasn't like a thresher shark, right? No, it looked like it wasn't a thresher. Jack looked and sounded calm, but then Jack would do his best to look and sound calm in the worst circumstances.
Yikes.
Yeah.
How long are we... Can we hang out here?
We're okay. We should have almost 15 minutes before we've got to start back.
Ellery nodded.
15 minutes was a long time underwater, but not so long when you were hoping to outweight a shark.
Jack said, "Let's check your gauge."
Ellery offered a look at his console. He was fully capable of checking his own gauge, but in this, he trusted Jack's judgment above his own.
Yes,
he trusted Jack in a way he couldn't remember trusting anyone before. Anyone who wasn't family already. Certainly he would never have trusted Brandon with his life, or wallet, nor even Todd.
That had to mean something, right?
Jack grunted. Maybe more like 10 minutes.
I know. I'm using up my air too fast. That shark, why was it circling us?
Trying to figure out what we were, most likely.
Because in movies,
in real life, they usually attack from below.
Okay,
Ellery said doubtfully. Jack winked. We should probably save our breath. He was not really a winky kind of guy, so he was trying to reassure Ellery. Ellery would have been more reassured if he hadn't realized Jack was trying to be reassuring, but he appreciated the effort. He was hoping with all his heart the shark was gone by the time they left the ship. That thing had been 8 feet long at least. At least! The very thought of it made him feel queasy. Until now, he hadn't realized he was afraid of sharks. Theater critics, spiders, financial ruin, sure. But a great white put the hairiest of spiders and theater critics into a whole different perspective. They waited, treading water, their clammy breaths bouncing off the claustrophobically low ceiling.
That ought to do it.
The metallic reverberation of Jack's voice jolted Ellery from his uneasy reflections.
You think?
That had to have been the fastest 10 minutes on record.
Jack nodded, spoke firmly.
See you topside.
Regulator in place, Jack sank slowly beneath the surface, bubbles popping on the slick water.
Ellery pushed his regulator back in, felt the sweet stream of oxygen, and submerged, trying not to think about whether the shark would be waiting for them when they left the wreck.
Probably not.
A shark that size probably had his priorities straight, probably knew better than to waste time on a pair of funny-tasting seals. His eyes adjusted to the unexpected brightness of Jack's flashlight beam cutting a swath through the murky water. Jack headed for the doorway in a couple of strong kicks.
Ellery followed, but something, the suggestion of motion in the water behind him, made him glance back, then do a double take.
The good news was the shark had not somehow sneaked inside the compartment. The bad news...
Well, it wasn't bad news, but what the heck was it?
He peered through the cloudy water, trying to understand what he was seeing, trying to make sense of that strange, misshapen brown form drifting on an invisible current. That weird, bulbous head like a space alien staring straight at him. Horror washed through him as suddenly, belatedly, he realized what he was seeing. Another diver. He yelled on a stream of bubbles, and Jack, who had slipped through the entrance, shot back inside the compartment as Ellery clambered back to the surface. Ellery tore his regulator out of his mouth, gasping the too thin air, mostly carbon dioxide at this point.
Holy freaking moly!
Jack yanked his mouthpiece out.
What? What is it?
There's something, someone down there, a diver.
A diver?
Jack sounded confused, instinctively peering down, trying to see through the turbid pool.
Maybe? I don't know what the hell it was.
That was the truth. It had looked like a turn-of-the-century diver, a ghost diver. And in this strange underwater world, he could about believe it had been just that. A ghost. Jack peered at him in the gloom. Then, without a word, jammed in his regulator and dived down, brushing past Ellery's legs as he directed the flashlight beam around the flooded interior. doubtfully. Ellery watched the pallid flicker of light, probing here and there, dissolving into darkness. Had he imagined that vision straight out of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea? But no, he hadn't. Jack was back in seconds, gloved hand clenched a fistful of what looked like brown canvas, an old diving suit. Jack spat the regulator out, said, "We'll talk surface side. Time to go. Now." He jammed the regulator back in and descended, heading once more to the compartment entrance. Ellery pushed his mouthpiece in and followed. The yellow triangle of Jack's flashlight beam illuminated cross braces and fallen beams as he propelled himself in strong kicks down the passage, dragging the diving suit behind him. Ellery finned after. The heavy brass helmet bobbed up and down as though nodding encouragement.
"You boys took your time,"
Cap called over the smack and slosh of waves against the hull of the Fishful Thinkin'.
"Was starting to think you ran into trouble."
He reached down to take Ellery's weights and then his vest and tank.
"No trouble," Jack called. "No? When I saw that fin out there, I started to wonder,"
Ellery muttered.
"You and me both."
Getting back on the boat was probably the hardest part of diving. Conscious of Jack patiently treading water a safe distance behind him, Ellery gripped the handrail of the boat ladder and removed his fins, one at a time, before stepping onto the ladder rung and scrambling aboard. He pulled his mask off. As much as he enjoyed diving, there was no better feeling than the roll of deck beneath his feet, those first deep breaths of fresh air, the kiss of sunlight on his face. All of it felt especially wonderful today.
"That shark was a great white," he told Cap.
"Was it? Well, they're out there whether we see them or not."
Cap leaned over the gunwale to take Jack's weight belt.
"What have you got there?"
"Ellery found an old diving suit."
Jack handed over his BCD and tank, and then hauled the heavy diving suit up.
"More like it found me."
Ellery joined Cap in grabbing for the canvas suit, which snagged on the ladder with an alarming tearing sound.
"What in tarnation? Sure the diver isn't still in it? This thing weighs a ton."
"Hold on."
Jack awkwardly shifted his grip on the ladder.
"Take the helmet first."
The barnacle-encrusted, pig-snout copper helmet appeared welded to the corselet, which was firmly clamped to the water-stained twill, so Ellery and Cap had to haul the suit by the bonnet up the ladder while Jack pushed and bunched from below. The helmet banged against the railing. The collection bag thumped against the steps as though filled with chains. Finally, they managed to dump the stained suit on the deck, the boots landing splayed, the helmet clanging down like the final toll of a bell. Jack threw his fins over the gunwale, climbed the ladder, and clambered over the side to join Ellery and Cap. They stared down at the crumpled suit. In the water, the suit had seemed to move with a semblance of ghostly life, but now it lay motionless in a lumpy, rotting pile on the deck of the Fishful Thinkin'. Still a very cool find. And yet, something about the sight of that suit gave Ellery a peculiar feeling in the pit of his stomach. He almost wished he hadn't seen it drifting there, staring at him like it had been waiting for them.
"Nora's going to be thrilled," Cap remarked. "Where'd you say you found it?"
Jack's mask had left red indentations, making forbidding lines in his face. He was still breathing hard from the effort to get the suit on board.
"We were on the Roussillon, what's left of her."
"The Roussillon?" Cap's bristling brows rose.
"That's funny. Why's that?" "The Roussillon sank in 1956. This looks more like a 1930s standard diving dress."
Ellery and Jack exchanged looks. "Maybe they were still using the old suits into the 50s? Ellery suggested.
"That sounds about right,"
Cap shrugged.
"And I could be wrong about the suit's age, though it seems to me the Historical Society has a similar one, maybe a little older. Nora is the one to ask. She'll know."
No question about that. Nora Sweeney, Ellery's assistant. No,
now assistant manager at the Crow's Nest bookstore, knew pretty much everything there was to know about Buck Island, past, present, and possibly future. Ellery was thinking about that, thinking Nora was certain to be delighted with their discovery as he studied the knobbly, water-stained pile of canvas. He wondered why he didn't feel delighted, because it was kind of an amazing find. But something about this felt wrong, worrying. He asked slowly, uneasily, why would the helmet be fastened to the suit? He could feel Jack and Cap staring at him. They wouldn't store the diving suit with the helmet already clamped on, would they?
No, I guess not, Cap said. He looked at Jack. He's right.
Ellery was thinking out loud. But then, if the suit wasn't in storage... Jack had to have had the same thought, because his, oh, hell, was both dismayed and heartfelt. He squatted down, and using his diving knife, tried to pry open the helmet's rusted and grimy front viewport. It took some doing, but at last the brass grille and faceplate swung to the side, revealing the dark, empty interior of the helmet. Ellery expelled a breath he hadn't realized he was holding until that moment of relief. Jack shoved his hair out of his eyes, scooted around so that he could better peer through the helmet into the suit. After a moment, he groaned and rocked back on his heels. He began to swear. No way, Ellery protested. It can't be. Cap looked in bewilderment from Jack to Ellery. His eyes widened.
You don't mean... You're not saying... Is there someone in there?
There was. Jack sounded bitter. Reluctantly, Ellery maneuvered for a better view being a matter of opinion, and at last was able to make out the grisly, rictus grin of a skull. Minus all the soft tissue, the body inside the suit had shrunk considerably. Or maybe the diver hadn't been all that big to begin with. Ellery said faintly, "You're kidding me." The skull laughed silently back at him.
Cap, phone the Coast Guard.
Jack gazed up at Ellery, his expression pained. He shook his head.
I don't believe it. I think we just swam right through a crime scene.